Welcome to Politically Enraged, the Lefties Refuge. Politically Enraged is a podcast purpose-built to discuss British and international disunity in political spaces, talk through ideas, introduce you to amazing people, and fight back against authoritarianism. My name is David Moo, I'm your host, and I hope you'll stick with us. Follow our Twitter at Political Rages, find us on Instagram and Ko-fi at Politically Enraged, and let's speak truth to power. Welcome to Politically Enraged, the podcast that is designed to make you gently weep in a corner if you're a lefty before picking up a spear and going Jacob Rees-Mogg hunting. You will find today I am joined by lefty streamer and designer extraordinaire Bounce, who is a close friend of mine. We've been chatting for, is it like a whole year now, or is it slightly less than a year?
It's probably knocking on to a year almost. I think my first political TikTok was at the end of February. So, it's almost a year, maybe 10 months.
Yes, well, it'll do. You know, we've become extremely close in that time, I think. Probably closer than two men dare to speak, but, you know.
Just not geographically, unfortunately.
No, definitely not that. But mind you, I have friends that live practically around the corner that I barely ever see. And it's not because I don't care about them. It's because I'm lazy.
But it's the best friends to have.
Exactly. But you, much like I am, as I said, a lefty and very focused on being as, and I hazard to use the phrase, woke, which is the subject of our discussion today. I believe that you are a passionate explainer of why, you know, generally caring about human beings isn't a bad thing. So a few questions first before we start diving into that. What is it that kind of got you into, you know, discussing politics and everything? Was there a particular thing? Was there an incident that got you started, or was it just a kind of always kind of mentality?
So I've got a lot of my political beliefs from my stepdad, who raised me since I was 4 or 5. And he and my stepbrother would have conversations in the car about politics when I was growing up, and I'd always sort of zone out. And as I got older, I realized the gravity about what they were talking about, how important it was. And yeah, hours long conversations about the state of the country, especially sort of post 2010, when we became the, I guess you could say we were the losers, being in a Tory country. It's all come from my dad. And then in 2016, with the EU referendum, I had this horrible sense of dread that something really, really bad was going to happen. Like you could see it in people, that they were just swallowing the snake oil. And like, no, this is what you think is going to happen is that's not it. Like, you're not just going to vote to leave the EU and then suddenly the only people in this country were born in this country. It doesn't work like that. And I don't know why you want that anyway. I'm thinking I'm going to separate myself from you, actually. So I got public about politics then, and it sort of tailed off for a little while because I just didn't have the platform. And then TikTok, as it has with you, Tansky, and other people in our circles, has provided a platform that can unpredictably reach thousands, if not millions, of people. You never know which one's going to do it, but the possibility is there. It's like, all right, I'm gonna put my thoughts out onto there. And literally, the first political TikTok I did went quite stupid by my standards at the time. It hit, I think, 20,000 views, and at the time I had 5 followers. I was like, oh wow, this is a lot to deal with, but I guess this is me now. This is what I'm doing.
Decided to hand your notice in and tell everyone you were an influencer and buy some expensive Ray-Bans, did you?
Oh, that story is one of the most ridiculous things.
I was like, that's what I would have done, because it took me a long time to kind of break into it. And it was I'd done a few political posts, but my first one that really exploded and went absolutely crazy and got hundreds of thousands of views was about erstwhile dried out corpse Donald Trump. So I kind of just suddenly got all this attention and was like, well, this is terrifying. But it is weird, isn't it? But we speak every day, and you know, I asked before this, like, what did you want to focus on? And the fact that you brought up the whole, like, well, political correctness has gone mad these days. I've seen it coming for a really long time, and have had multiple ridiculous experience with it. I'm just wondering, in particular, is there anything that's made you really hyper-focused on kind of dealing with people that are, like, so-called anti-woke?
I think what really did it for me was realizing my white privilege.
Yeah.
Because when I was in my sort of like late teens, early 20s, I was of the opinion that nothing is, like, everything is fair game. Like, if someone gets offended by something, well, you should just take it on the chin. As long as it's in the form of a joke, that was my thinking. As long as it's a joke and your intent is not to actually harm or offend, and people do take offense, then that's on them. However, when I came to realize my white privilege, my privilege of being assigned male at birth, and just being able to see just how different it is, and having conversations with other people, seeing how different their lives are to mine, and I go, okay, so some things, they really are out of bounds. That if you're not part of that community, if you've not had that experience, you really don't have the right to pass comment on them. Not in a combative or derogatory way, at least.
Yeah. I guess it's not been much fun for you the last kind of... Because the anti-woke stuff really started in earnest, like, I think it was maybe early mid-2019, we really started to see people talking about it regularly.
It with that phrase, yeah. However, I think it started, in decades ago. Because it is just a reskin of, it's political correctness gone mad, and whatever was said before that. It's always been around. It's just they've got a new... Well, the thing is, the people that call you woke or call other people woke as an insult, they really think it is an insult. That's what you have to get through to them. That is what you're saying. That's not an insult. It's a preferable way to be. If you're living life trying to be genuinely good to other people and understand other people's plights, if you think that's what I am, then I'll take that all day long.
It's strange anyway, because if you actually Google it, if you Google, you know, define woke, I don't even need to do it because I have done it before. It's awake to social injustice, usually of racial disparity. So all it means is that you're aware that there is systemic racism and attuned to it and want to deal with it. Like, and I just find it so funny that that's become an insult. And that, again, you know, another thing that's to do with race has been devalued by people that are uncomfortable with talking about the horrible things that have happened in the past. And like, it cracks me up. I've written a couple of blog posts about how what's wrong with being woke and there's no such thing as cancel culture and all that, because those things are all tied together. And my favorite blog post I've written is called "There's No Such Fucking Thing as Cancel Culture, You Snowflakes," because people act like my favorite thing about cancel culture is that it doesn't exist for the people who are worried about it. Nigel Farage could go on TV and talk about cutting people up that he doesn't like, and all it would do is put his name in the papers and he'd be able to sell a book and talk about
almost the opposite of cancel culture. It's almost it really is the concept of no publicity is bad publicity.
Yeah, absolutely.
No one actually gets cancelled, and it's not cancel culture anyway. For instance, the comedian, I use this term lightly, the comedian Andrew Lawrence, who made the comment, after the Euro 2020 final, saying, all I'm saying is the white people scored their penalties. And then he had shows cancelled by venues, and yet the show was cancelled. He was not. He can still do shows at places that will welcome his out-of-date, just bigoted beliefs. But he himself is not cancelled. And that's the difference that people don't see. It's not cancel culture, it's consequence culture. You can think whatever you want, you can say it to whoever you want, but don't expect for those people to stick around.
Yeah. There's this strange idea with people who are like of that ilk that everyone's secretly like that. Everyone secretly likes it. And, you know, much like you, when I was younger, I was of the opinion that, you know, if you're saying it as a joke, you should be able to say whatever you want and you should be able to do the risque comedy and things. And I just have changed so much as I've learned of other people's experiences and thought no one should make jokes about that because they don't get it. And I think it makes me cringe thinking of the fact that I used to be more insensitive than I am. When you actually listen to the reasoning behind making the jokes, it's basically just I want to point and laugh at people that aren't me. And, you know, when you become mature, you fail to see the comedy in that, I think.
The irony of that as well is the defences, you should be able to say whatever you want. But when it's someone saying, hey, that's racist, that's not cool. Well, you should be able to say whatever you want. Well, I'm telling you, that's racist. I'm saying what I want. I should be able to say what I want too.
But I also wonder what would happen to these comedians if I started doing, you know, two-hour-long specials about how uncool sort of balding middle-aged straight white guys are and how, like, you know, they like to mow the lawn in flip-flops. Like, who operates a big blade in flip-flops? How dumb are you? You know, do you want to lose your toes? Like, if those kind of jokes started going over really, really well with everyone that wasn't straight white cis men, I'm sure they would have a massive problem with it because it's laughing at them
and
at their expense.
There'd be absolute uproar, and it would be, you'd be seen as going out of your way to try and turn them into the joke.
Yeah.
But there's certain rules of comedy as well that comedians should stick by. You should draw on your own experience, being one, and you should always punch up.
Yeah.
So for cis white straight male comedians, they don't have a lot of room to punch up because they're almost as high as you can get in terms of privilege. So you can make jokes about celebrities, possibly. Politicians are always fair game. But more often than not, you have to draw on personal experience, do things that do not marginalize a community that you are not a part of.
Do you think that's why there's a lot of talk about, because, you know, in particular in the trans debate, which I hate calling it that at the minute, apologies to any trans listeners, it's not a debate, it's people being assholes to you for no reason. But do you think that's the reason that there's this weird, like, I feel like anti-trans people are always like, well, trans people are privileged because they're blah blah blah, and it's like, I mean, if you want to think of that as privilege, I just see it as people, you know, living their lives. But also that privilege that you're talking about comes with a heap inside of you might get murdered. And I feel like they don't really understand what they're saying because they accuse trans people of privilege when the fact is that just by being trans, you are more likely to be homeless, more likely to be a victim of sexual assault, more likely to be murdered. And it's like, I don't really think that that's privilege. I'll be honest with you.
No, it shows a complete stupefying ignorance. Mm. Because if they were to spend one day as a trans person, they would see just how difficult it can be for those people. I myself can't properly empathize with it. Not being close to the community, really. But I have spoken to people and I've heard their stories, and nobody wants to go through it. The percentage of trans people that are sexually assaulted is horrifying, and it's always from people who will claim that trans people are an abomination, they're wrong, they're unnatural, but then they're the people that then sexually assault them. There's a whole psychology to it that is probably way too deep for me to get into and to get into onto the podcast. But I'm glad you brought up trans people, actually, because one difficult conversation that I had to have was with my stepdad, who I got, I'd say, 99% of my beliefs from. And we were talking about things that had been in the news recently, and I think it was a rugby team come under fire for going out on a night out all dressed like women.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And he started it off with, oh, it's just bloody ridiculous. They're just going out on a night out dressed up. I went, is it ridiculous, though? Because would you say that if they'd all gone out in blackface? And obviously he said, well, no, that'd be wrong. I went, right. So what is the difference between going out in blackface and going out dressed as a lady when you are a man? And he thought about it for a moment, and I said, those big burly rugby players are making light of real decisions that people have to make, like real life-changing, could change their family dynamic, could change how they are with their friends, just change everything. But these men are making light of it. They're doing it for fun, and it just doesn't sit right. And it was a conversation that I'd never expected to have with him, but by the end of it, like he was starting to see the issue with it.
So I have a question that follows on from all of this anyway, because I have my own theories, but I really want to hear yours when it comes to this. Who do you think is driving this like obsession with like the war on woke? Like who do you think the main players are? Because I have my own really well-established theory that I'll get into, but I want to hear your take on it first, because everyone I speak to has different ideas and I want to know what yours is.
It's an interesting one. I don't have a concrete opinion on where it stems from. However, I like the idea that it's people who are anti-woke, if you want to call them that. I'd rather just call them racist, transphobe, homophobe, misogynist, whatever. whatever flavor of anti-woke they actually are. There's a theory that they are the ones that try and find the most ridiculous thing and then they will try and cancel it and then blame it on the woke culture, who, like, the genuine people who are quote unquote woke. So it makes the genuinely nice, welcoming people look like the bad ones, because they want to take away a pub called the Black Lion or the Black Horse or something, because it has the word black. And I think there is some truth to that, that they'll latch onto something, take it to the most extreme thing that they can to try and belittle absolutely everything else.
I think my favorite part of that is just purely that they are ultimately the ones getting upset by things. And if you want to go with their phraseology, triggered, like, and it makes me laugh so much, because these are the people who'll be like, oh, you can't say anything these days. It's ridiculous. Did you know that someone got kicked out of university because they said that they'd murder an Indian and they were talking about food? And it's like, that's not the whole story, though, is it? Like, what's the whole story? And they hear the byline, if you want, or whatever it is, and they're just like, right, that's it, made my decision. And it's that, like obsession with outrage. I don't think it's like woke culture. I think it's outrage culture. These people are determined to fixate on something that they don't need to fixate on because they just want to be angry at things. And the reason I asked about who drives it is because it fits in perfectly with the podcast and with everything else that I'm always discussing, because anyone that can't see that these discussions, like the row about trans rights, or the is there systemic racism? No, there's not. Yes, there is. Like the backwards and forwards about that. If you ask me, it's so clear it's all being driven by a conservative government that's desperate to make you go, look at this thing over there that's so offensive. Anyway, so we're just going to raise your taxes.
And oh, it's completely dead cat.
Yeah, it's absolutely, because we keep talking about dead cats at the minute because there's the dead cat of a fucking war to try and disrupt like conversation about parties. And it's so clear that that's like, this is that, but on a sort of media scale, like instead of us getting news articles that focus on the smaller things that a completely inept government do, we're getting stories out about, oh, well, did you know that this transgender swimmer beat this other transgender swimmer? They're all at it and it's because of the hormones. And it's like, Jesus Christ, just focus on something else, will you? Like, can we talk about the real problems that actually affect us instead of two swimmers I'm never going to meet?
Yeah, it's the New Zealand weightlifter. I can't remember her name.
Laurel Hubbard.
Laurel Hubbard, that's it.
Yes.
Yeah, so before I go to a little bit with Ukraine and Russia, the weightlifter from New Zealand, Laurel Hubbard, trans woman, assigned male at birth, and there was so much uproar before the Olympics started. Oh, and it was always, oh, he's got an advantage. He's going to do this. No. She. Let's just get this straight. She. And no, she doesn't have an advantage. She's competing in a sport with other people who are equal, lesser, or better than her. That's how sport works. And then she came dead last.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, you see? So she didn't have an advantage, clearly, from being assigned male at birth. There is no better example of their arguments just crumbling away. It's almost like it could have been done deliberately. I'm not saying it was, but like if you had scripted that, you'd have gone, oh, that's a bit on the nose.
Well, Pete, see, there's a really funny thing that's happened recently, because of all people to weigh in on the trans people in sports, Michael Phelps weighed in on trans swimmers, like I mentioned. And it's really funny because Michael Phelps was like, well, you know, people with biological advantages. Michael Phelps, you literally have a genetic condition that means that you are better at swimming than people that don't have your genetic condition.
Isn't he like super tall as well, or am I making that up?
Super tall, giant feet, has more skin between his fingers and toes than people normally do. Has giant lung capacity and all this other stuff. Like he's genetically superior. There's also a cis runner who produces quite a lot of like the hormones that allow you to run faster and further without needing to take a break. Like these are people born in their gender that they identify with, who have literal genetic superiority because of the way their body is developed. And
it's not actually to do with being different genders to each other.
Yeah,
it is just the genetics of a human being superior in one specific field to another.
It's funny though as well, because it fits in with, there was a lot of stuff that I didn't know growing up that kind of fits in with colonialism and stuff, because I don't know if you ever heard this. I remember growing up, there was this rumor that like people of color were better at running because they're like muscle and bone and blah, blah, blah is different than white people. And, you know, when you're a kid and someone tells you something and you're just like, huh, okay. And I believed that for years, and it's garbage. Yeah. It was a way that white supremacists separated themselves off from people of color by being like, well, did you know that they're like this? And it's like, No.
And it would always, they'd always try and say, well, say black people are very physically capable, but we're more intelligent.
That's one of the really awful theories. And it's like, you know, when the whole, I'm the first to admit that when the whole BLM thing happened after George Floyd's murder and everything, I sat back and was like, holy shit, I am so ignorant. I had no idea that racism was still this prevalent and it was still this bad. And I did fucking tons of research. I've got books out of my eyeballs about racism everywhere. But I still don't feel as informed as I should, because I think it's a lifelong learning thing. But suddenly becoming aware of it and looking into these things, that's what made like the war on work and all of that seem even stupider, because it's so spiteful when you see the other side of it. Like a bunch of people who are disproportionately stopped by the police and at greater risk of police harm, at greater risk of mortality, because like medicine for people of color isn't as advanced, which is fucking disturbing.
There is also the disproportionate treatment that people of color get in hospitals, because that, especially for pregnant people, there's this opinion that people have that some pregnant person of color should be able to withstand the pain more. They should have a higher pain threshold. So midwives, nurses, doctors are less inclined to give them the pain relief that they actually desperately need, because there's this presumption that they just cope better. And it's actually led to complications in birth and even death in some cases.
Yeah. And it's like we were saying as well, you know, it just goes back to the fact that these people will cheerfully refer to people like me and you as snowflakes, but I don't know if you saw it. There is an illustration that's come out in a new learning journal that had a woman of color who was pregnant, and it showed, you know, the usual like in vitro cross section where it shows the person and then their uterus, but then that's cross sected and you see the child and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It was that, but it was a woman of color. And there was like outrage online.
That is just disgusting. Our children don't need to know that people of color can have children.
It wasn't even that. It was just these people just suddenly being like, oh, all this pointless wokery. And it was like, it's a drawing. I don't understand what the issue is. Like, why they were so offended by the fact that it was a black woman instead of a white woman. And it's because it's so ingrained into us that you always see the white people in these drawings. And like, I saw it and was like, huh, that's cool. And then moved on. But again, these people will say that we are the ones desperate to get offended, but they were like talking about it for days. It opened up a whole discourse online because this drawing was a black woman instead of a white woman. What is that?
I can sort of bring this a bit full circle, actually. Going back to the Euro 2020 final, I was watching it and I hadn't comprehended that it was the black players that had missed their penalties. I went onto Twitter and someone had said, oh shit, it's the black players that missed their penalties, get ready. And I was like, no. And then that tweet was bang on, because then it just flooded with racist comments towards them. I was like, wow, you really looked for any reason to vent your racism there, didn't you? You just needed the slightest thing. So you needed a black player to miss a penalty when a white player scored, or you needed a person of color to be depicted in a book for you to exercise your racism.
It's like, it's almost like a how dare they exist thing. And that feeds into something that I've talked about, because I know that, I mean, I'll apologize now because I'm bringing it back to the conversation that you probably thought was buried in December. But every single year around December time, they start playing A Fairy Tale of New York. And every single year, I'm like, why can't they just play the censored version? And every single year I have the same discourse of, oh, you just want to change everything because you're offended. Well, I don't mind. I think it's fine. And it's like, there's a word in that song that's personally offensive to me because it is a slur about me. You don't understand what it's like to have a slur about you because there are no slurs about you, but you're willing to say it and risk pissing me off because why? What do you get out of it? Like, do you enjoy saying slurs? Is it that particular word? And then it all comes down to, because I remember pushing and pushing and pushing, like maybe 40, 50 people to have the conversation with me, like, why? What is it that you get out of saying it? And the answer is nothing. They get nothing out of saying it, but they don't like being told what to do. And that's it.
But that's exactly how you have that conversation with them. You say, why is it you want to say it? And they go, they have that thought in their head. If they're not just so hardened that they'll just go, because I hate then they'll go, oh wait, why do I want to say it? Do I think it's funny? Well, it's not funny, it's offensive. It's really offensive. And it causes people a lot of, why do I want, maybe I shouldn't be saying it. You can get some people, not all people, but you can get some people to take on that train of thought, and it can really help in some cases. But that is the way you do it. You don't just go, you don't hear someone sing that line. If anyone is slightly confused with what line it is, it's the F word. It's the F word, and it's not fuck or feck. There you go.
It's like the reason behind saying it, like what it is that drives someone to want to say a word that they know is a slur.
Yeah, and just when you actually talk to them about it and make them realize that it's not, I'm going to sound like my dad. It's not big and it's not clever.
It's always interested me what it is that actually drives people to want to say those kind of things, because I don't really get it. And I remember, like, bearing in mind, I grew up in the countryside and there weren't really any people of color. There weren't really any people from abroad. So I never really understood, like, from people of color's perspective, because no one ever told me, but I also just didn't really get it. I didn't really get what people get out of being racist. And all I remember from my like adolescence and stuff, there was this weird amount of suspicion around people of color. And it genuinely reminded me of League of Gentlemen. They're like, you know, this is our village for our people. Like people were like frozen on the outside. And I didn't really get why. It's this like natural suspicion of people that aren't you, but considering it's skin color, do you know what I mean? Like, if I was born with like more dusky skin, would people have like frozen me out? It's just such a weird thing to like fixate on and dislike in other people. It's always been a bit of a mystery to me as to why racism is even a thing. Cause it's just like, would you judge people for having green eyes, or would you judge people for having, well, I mean, people do judge people for ginger hair, don't they?
I was going to move on to that, actually. That there's, when you move away from racism and you find other things that people are born with, that people will discriminate against people for. Being a redhead is one of them. And I had a conversation with my wife not long ago, and we said, remember the last time you heard a blonde joke? And that's a prime example of something that isn't okay, that's just been phased out. And nobody's really noticed, I don't think. Because if you say to someone, when was the last time you heard a joke about a blonde? I don't know, years ago. But people haven't thought of it. But those jokes, okay, the blonde thing isn't really the main thing, because it's a misogynist joke. If you move away from race, there's so many things that people are born as or with that a lot of people want to separate themselves from and belittle the others.
I like, my personal opinion when it comes to like anti-wokeness and all this shit is that, and the reason why it's so prevalent here is that I think everyone's life is kind of a bit crap at the minute, you know, like we've got a lot of stuff going on that means that our lives are tough, whether that's dealing with COVID or dealing with the fallout from Brexit or dealing with not having as much money and things being more expensive and the fact that we live in England, so it's always cold, like it's always cold. I'm sat here in the thickest sock you've ever seen right now, just so my toes stay attached. But like, I think people search for a way to make themselves feel superior to someone else, because I can't be the lowest of the low. There's got to be someone beneath me. And it leads to like, well, at least I'm not a woman. At least I'm not a person of color, because, you know, racist shit. At least I'm not a gay guy. At least I'm not trans. At least I'm not blah, blah, blah. And there's this like weird...
It's all the perception that those are lesser.
Yeah. And like, it's fun to other, because then you're part of the crowd and they're outside. Like, it's like just a desperation to fit in. And I guess it's a bit of a pack animal thing, maybe like, who knows, mm-hmm. Maybe before we evolved, humans were pack animals, and it's just devolved into friggin' Regina George's school of being assholes to each other to feel superior thing.
But what we should be doing though, and what those people should be doing, is going back to that golden rule, is punching up. Don't belittle the people around you. Fight the people at the top, the people with the power that are making your lives misery, that are trying to divide you in any which way they can. They're the people that you need to focus your anger upon, not other people who are, whether you want to believe it at this moment or not, are your equals.
That's the thing, isn't it? It's like trying to get people to become aware of it, because I've had so many rows with anti-trans people online, and I have said this point over and over again, and I will stick to it because I'm convinced that I'm right. And the point is, if you dealt with institutional, and I mean like societal misogyny, 9/10 of the transphobic people would not give a shit about trans women, because their problem isn't with trans women. It's aimed at cisgender men and it's directed at trans women, because they see all men as untrustworthy, and any connection at all with being male, masculine, whatever, whether that's you were born as one and then transitioned or whatever, you retain that like air of being untrustworthy, of being creepy. And if we dealt with society, like if we looked at society and went, where is it that, because I've said this to you before, where is it that society goes wrong with raising men that means that men don't necessarily understand where the line is with consent and with talking misogynistically? We saw all that stuff come out yesterday about the Met and those police officers that were texting each other disgusting things.
Disgusting, vile, like vile messages.
If we could figure out where society fails those guys and fix it so that they don't have this twisted, disconnected sense of like other people as less than them, then all of those fears would disappear. We'd all get on a lot better. And while we're not doing that and we're focusing on like making each other the enemy instead of the actual enemy, which like, and I hate to say this because it does sound a bit cheesy, but the patriarchy, if we actually started working on dismantling the patriarchy and making a society that works well for everyone, including people of color and all women, cis, trans, whatever, then we wouldn't have the problems that we have anymore, because we'd actually be trying to deal with it. But I feel like somewhere out there right now in a smoky boardroom, there's a bunch of men in suits with cigars giggling about the fact that trans, like anti-trans people are attacking trans people, and there's like misogynistic women, and there's like certain bits of people that agree with their own oppression and stuff. It's so confusing. And the only people that benefit is them. Yeah, the only people that benefit from people with internalized misogyny are these imaginary men. Yeah, like the men that I imagine sit in boardrooms and giggle about women, but they aren't imaginary. Those people exist. They do sit there and go, like, oh, how dumb of them to to focus their energy on each other instead of us. Like, thank God, another 10 years of being able to do what we want. That's a very real thing.
And that's
not as cartoony as I say, but
but that's because we don't punch up.
Yeah. If we learned how to do it, I think the world would be a better place. And that's part of, like, you know, it's what you do so well in your videos and, you know, in all the stuff that you post on Twitter. Like, you punch up, you say stuff that's funny, but it's about those people that really do make our lives worse with their ignorance and with their actions. And it's part of what's made me, like, admire you and become such a good friend with you, because, of course, it's nice to see someone do that and to really call these people out for their bullshit, whereas, you know, a lot of other people are too busy fighting each other.
If I could just swing back around to people, transphobic people.
You
and
can.
One of their classic arguments that we've discussed before, and it's that the use of toilets.
Oh yeah, the good old toilet. Well,
if a trans woman can use a toilet, what's to stop her? A man just dressing up as a woman and you using the women's toilets and raping a woman. They can literally do that whether a trans woman can use that toilet or not.
Exactly.
That your issue is not with trans women. Your issue is with cis men.
Yeah, exactly.
Who are rapists.
Exactly. And the thing is, we've discussed this in our group, like, it's not an unfounded fear. Like, sure, it hasn't really happened that we know of. We don't really hear many incidences of it, but it's a completely rational fear that someone might do that. But that is not because of transgender people. It's because we live in a society, as I've said, where men are, like, congratulated by each other for, like those police officers did, sending each other jokes, saying that it's easier to get a woman in bed with a knife than it is with a credit card and stuff like that, you know? Mm.
And if you were to smack one of them, that they'll be all over you and they'll respect you more.
Yeah, because it's in their DNA. What the hell was that? And that's a police officer. And I think the funniest, there's so many stupid things about the bathroom fast debate, whatever, when you get into it, because, like, another thing is that, like, it's always spoken about genitals and, like, getting genitals out and stuff. Like, and I don't know about you, but I hold a certain amount of apprehension whenever I'm in a bathroom with other people. Like, if I'm getting changed at the gym, I actively try and make sure people don't see my genitals. And the problem isn't trans people flashing their genitals. It's like, I wouldn't want to be around anyone that's, like, holding the genitals around and like walking around with them hanging out and proud, because that's weird. Like, it's not about your gender. It's about, don't be a weirdo.
Yeah. I've never been comfortable with open changing rooms and people that just hang loose. It's just, why do you think that, like, why do you think that people are comfortable knowing that that is in their eye line? Like you're actively making people need to look away.
I think some of it, like, genuinely, because, again, like, everything I bring up on this podcast, I've discussed with all of my mates in my political group, by the way, everyone, which is why the conversation just flows. But I think there's a power dynamic to it. And I think that that's something, I think that that is partly where we need to start addressing this societally, because, like, I go to the gym almost every single day, and every single day there will be a guy in the changing room with his mate talking really loud, shoving him and stuff, and they'll be half dressed and everything. And they're so obnoxiously loud. And, like, it was like a week and a half ago, there were three guys getting changed and they were all, like, completely naked, shoving each other. And I was like, what the hell? And I realized it's like almost, it's like a display, like, you know, like dogs hump each other for
dominance.
Yeah. For dominance. And it's that, it's literally that, it's that behavior. Like, guys will do that kind of shit. Yeah. Guys do that kind of shit as a, like, I'm in charge, look at me, I'm the one that's doing this to you. And that mindset is so disturbing and so common. And it's taken me a really long time to realize it, because I, you know, like, as a gay guy, I always feel like I exist a little bit outside that spectrum, because I don't, I have no want or need to impress someone with my masculinity, because I don't really have it and I don't care. because masculinity is just this weird concept to me that it can be picked up and put down to an extent, but it's also not real. Like, my version of masculinity isn't anybody else's. It's fictional.
Yeah, it's fabrication.
Yeah, and this weird, but this is where it becomes problematic. When society keeps pushing the idea that you're a real man if you don't let your woman talk shit to you, and you're a real man if you, like, you know, like when your mates are around you and they turn away and you put your fingers together and shove them up their ass, like, that makes you a real man because you're in charge, you're the boss because you do that to people. Like, that's the kind of harmful bullshit that needs to stop. And it's those people that will, again, perpetuate the, like, anti-woke bullshit, because they'll be like, you'll call them out on something that they do or say that's problematic, and you get told that you work. Because it's happened to me when I've called out men for misogyny. You know, I'm far from a perfect ally, but I try really hard to be protective of women in general and the women in my life. And I know that you are as well, from the stuff that we've spoken about. And you get told off, or like people roll their eyes because you tell guys to be respectful of women. And sometimes, as a gay guy, I look at the things that straight guys say and I'm like, do you even like women? Like, do you like them in any way other than like that they make you pee hard? Like,
you certainly don't respect them.
Yeah, like, and I can't imagine what it's like to have that kind of mindset where, I don't know how to say this delicately, but you just see someone as a fuck toy. Like, because that is the impression that I get from a very small but very real proportion of people. And that is worrying, because nobody is just a fuck toy. Like, nobody.
No.
At all.
And that is where, with people like that and people like the Met police officers, is Met police officers, just before I accidentally slander them, it's Met police officers whose messages have been sent out, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah. And people like the Met police officers whose WhatsApp messages have been released, they need that gentle challenge from someone. So when someone's, when the man said that you get more respect from a woman if you smack her, you need someone there to go, would you accept that if that was your dad smacking your mother? And okay, sometimes you'll get, yeah, you did smack my mum. What? So what? That's what you do. You will get the people who might think like that, and then when you say it, even that, just that one small analogy is enough to get them to start changing their views. And that, there's a example of someone that I work with, who's I'm a lorry driver, for anyone that doesn't know. Someone that I work with had been given a lift from one of his friends, and someone had cut him up or something like that. And he bibbed his horn, like, for a ridiculous amount of time. He's caught, and it was an old woman that had cut him up, and he's screaming at her, yelling at her. And the man that I work with said, what if that was someone doing that to your mum? And that was it. That was enough to make that man change how he was on the road. So it can just be just a simple, what if it was this? And that's not whataboutery. but yeah, it can really be as simple as that, just to change someone's viewpoint slightly into being more accepting and less of a shit, essentially.
Yeah. Is that your advice then? Because I know that you said that you wanted to talk about, like, how you handle it. And I'm a bit of a neophyte, and I'm old school me. I just moan at people until they either tell me to shut the fuck up or threaten to kill me or just stop talking. Like, you seem better at handling these things. So what's your advice for actually dealing with these things on a real basis instead of society? What would you say that you deal with?
I should have probably said this like about half an hour ago. I've been distracted by my own mind.
Relatable.
Yeah. So the way I deal with things is just to, you come at it calmly, because if you come at it and you're combative, that makes people defensive. It only strengthens their resolve. If you come at it calmly, ask sensible questions, not loaded questions, ask a sensible question, get them to explain what they said, why they said it, why they think it's acceptable. And you can see it more often than not, their viewpoint and their argument falls apart. Because ultimately, most people aren't terrible. A lot of people are bad, but most people aren't terrible. And it is possible, just with gentle nudges, to help people become less bigoted, less misogynist, less racist, less homophobic, less transphobic. And it works better than labeling them as racist, misogynistic, etc. Because that just gets their back up, gets them defensive, makes them feel like a victim, that they're being unfairly treated, and it's somehow the people's fault that they are discriminating against themselves.
I think one of the funniest things for me is that they will often turn it back on you. Like, the amount of times that people who have been saying the most disgusting racist stuff have been like, "I'm not racist, you're racist." And then, like I said, I did so much reading, because obviously we were still in the throes of a really serious lockdown when the BLM protests happened. And I love it, because I just say, I mean, yeah, like, all white people in our society are racist because we're born into a system that's upheld by white supremacy and has been for hundreds of years. And they don't know what to say. And that's you kind of opening to just be like, you don't have to, like, say problematic shit. You can just, like, do a little bit of reading, a little bit of understanding about what it's like to live someone else's life, and it makes you a better person because you understand the world more, and it seems like the world is a little bit, like, more open to you because you get other people's perspectives. And when I haven't just lost my shit, because I always do, because I'm a fiery little motherfucker, when I actually have those discussions with people, I have actually had people be like, "You're totally right, actually. I've never thought about it from someone else's perspective before." And it's not changing the mind of a generation. It's not like, you know, being some amazing equal rights figure or anything like that. But even if you change 1, 2, 3 people's minds about it, or at least make them more receptive to it, I think that you can count that as a win, especially in a society where we're so polarized all the time. Because I feel like at the minute, that's all that these debates have, you know, like you mentioned Brexit, like Leave Remain or woke, anti-woke, and, you know, just on and on and on with these labels of people being on one side or another. We're always fighting each other for something. And I think if you can just get someone to give a bit and just say a bit of your perspective, then you can count that as a win, because in this day and age, it's difficult to do that.
Yeah. You mentioned doing a lot of reading. One book, I didn't read it. I listened to it because being on the road, I have a lot of time. But it's not advisable to read a physical book while you're driving a lorry, just in case everyone's thinking of doing that this weekend. Or
not impossible, but not advised.
Bounce says no. there is a book I listened to after the BLM protest this year, because one thought I had, do you remember there were Black Lives Matter protests a few years ago, I think 4 or 5 years ago?
Yeah.
But they weren't quite to the scale of the ones of 2020. And one thought I had, which was a thought I'm not proud of, is, what are you protesting about? Of course your lives matter. That we're not in a racist country. Because I didn't open myself up to their actual experiences. But there is one book by the rapper Akala called Natives that I listened to. And do you know it? Have you read it?
It's on my list, actually. I haven't managed to buy it yet, but it's on my list.
I recommend it wholeheartedly. He speaks from personal experience growing up as an intelligent black boy. And the ways that he was treated growing up in London and the things he saw, because he saw role models, like black role models, in a way that white people didn't. So his attention was focused on them more than a white person was.
Yeah.
And he talks about how Linford Christie was treated. He talks about the controversy with Frank Bruno. And it really opened my eyes to how much racism is still around. And it's a bit stealthy. Like, we as white people, we won't see it. It won't be shown. Like, racists won't show it to us that they have that. But if it's a one-on-one with a racist and a person of color, it will come out.
Yeah.
And that's why there are a lot of people who still believe that there is no racism in this country, because they're not witness to it.
Yeah.
And yeah, that book, Natives by Carla, is something I'd recommend everyone reads and or listens to.
There's two that I recommend that I got really obsessed with. I can't actually remember the title, but there's one by Ibram X. Kendi that's amazing. And that's just about like how the world is and like from the frame of someone that goes through these things directly.
Mm.
And that gives you a greater understanding of it. And that kind of led me to really question everything and sort of start picking apart my own thoughts and my own thought patterns around it. And then there's another one, Why I'm Not Talking to White People About Race Anymore.
I've got that on my list.
Rennie Edo Lodge. And that just blew my mind, because I didn't get taught about imperialism and colonialism and things like that in school. I didn't get taught about it. And to read someone be like, all of these awful things happened at Liverpool docks, and then there were all these racist gangs chasing people around and stuff. And to have it spelled out so unflinchingly, and for this person to be like, you don't understand what it's like to tell people that this is your experience, and for them to be like, no, it's not. And if we could just deal with that mindset, if we could just get people to not immediately write off other people's experience because it's different than theirs and listen, the world would be an amazing place. And there's one person who said something that stuck in my mind for years, who actually came out as trans 2 years ago. What's his name? Elliot Page. Elliot Page, when he came out as a lesbian a few years ago at the GLAAD Awards, I think it was, he said, the world would be a much better place if we could just stop being horrible to each other for 2 minutes. And that has stuck with me for years, because it's so simple, but probably the most important message that I think anyone in modern times has gotten across to me.
Yeah, it's... A similar thing to the kill them with kindness. If you are good to people, that there's something in them that goes, I'm a fucking absolute shit to them, but they're still being nice to me. It's another way of just getting people to question their own ways and actually try and build themselves up a bit better.
Yeah, very that. I was interested to talk to you specifically about the whole anti-wokeness thing, because it's interesting to get, like, I always speak to my gay guy friends about this, because we just do, you know, like the amount of crap that we hear, you wouldn't believe. So to get a different perspective on it and a heterosexual perspective on it is cool, because it's rare that I hear it.
Well, there's the Prime Minister making shields of reports that you need to wait for them to come out. And once one's been smashed into pieces, he's got another shield. You need to wait for this report now. And he's running out of shields.
Is he running out of shields? Because I feel like we're running out of swords. I feel like, again, I wrote a blog piece a little while ago called We Need to Stop Assuming That Everyone Has Morals. And I think that that applies in this situation. We're under the impression that Boris Johnson operates like we would, and he's running out of like logical things to use as shields. But Boris Johnson's illogical, and he will keep finding things to hide behind, and they will just become increasingly ludicrous. But he's never going to stop throwing things on the bonfire. He's resorted to erroneously asserting that Keir Starmer enabled a paedophile in the Houses of Parliament. And that's where we're at in this discourse now. The Prime Minister of the UK is telling literal lies about the opposition to try and distract from the fact that he can't follow his own laws.
There's a couple of things that really, really bother me about that, is that he's tried to capitalise on the pain and suffering from Jimmy Savile's victims.
Mm-hmm.
With a lie as well, just to add insult to injury there. I can't imagine if one of Savile's victims was listening or watching that on Monday, to hear that come out of the blue like that, that would be so damaging, I'd imagine. But yeah, it must be so damaging for that wound to be opened up in such a callous and horrible way. And the other thing that bothers me about it is the fact that it was an out-and-out lie, and he's not able to be challenged on it. Yet when Ian Blackford calls him a liar, he has to leave. I understand that that's the rules of the House of Commons, and if everyone was allowed to call everyone a liar, it would just become one big slagging match and probably end up in a fist fight. But
wouldn't you pay to see Keir Starmer punch Boris Johnson in the face, though? Wouldn't you pay to see?
I don't know if I would, because as much as I support Keir Starmer and the Labour Party, there is that gif that I see every now and again when the polls come out with Labour leading, and someone will use the gif of him punching a punch bag, and it's a bit weak. I'd rather leave it to someone else. Maybe Angela Rayner.
She would absolutely make mincemeat of him.
I feel like she'd put his teeth to the back of his skull.
The joy that image gives me.
It's a good image, right?
Who wouldn't want to see Angela Rayner throttling Boris Johnson?
I tell you who wouldn't. Nadine Dorries.
I don't know. I feel like she would. I don't know, you know. I think it's only a matter of time until he breaks poor Nadine's heart, and then she'll be probably defecting to the Labour benches, sobbing all the way.
Eating a kangaroo's dick or something.
Eating or just gently chewing on, as if it's...
like a pepperoni.
Sugar-free chewing gum, yeah.
But Nadine, can you save the kangaroo dick chewing for when you're not sitting next to me, actually? Fuck off.
I mean, better a kangaroo's dick than your own if you're Dominic Raab, anyway.
Oh, has he had a rib removed so he can do that, has he? It wouldn't surprise me.
Probably had a rib removed because he heard that disabled people get access to the sea earlier.
What an absolute... Why was he not challenged more on that? I know Angela Rayner did in PMQ. She did have a little pop at him for that. But like, he didn't come under enough flack for saying the sea was closed.
I mean, the guy does regularly make himself a laughingstock. The video James O'Brien made, which is still widely available on Twitter, everyone, of him pointing out all of Dominic Raab's inconsistencies, which resulted in Dominic Raab blocking him like a 14-year-old emo listening to someone say that their favourite band is bad.
Yeah, that is a particularly fantastic video, actually. The fact that he was unaware of the importance of the Dover to Calais crossing while he was Brexit secretary?
Genius.
Fantastic.
And these are the people that run our country.
They are. They're the people that are really sticking behind Tubby Custard.
Well, I mean, when you clear out your benches of moderates who can actually inject some sense into everything that you're doing and replace it with people that answer your phone calls with, yes, master, you can only expect this kind of thing.
That is true, that is true. but, yeah, the problem for me that Boris Johnson can just completely out and out lie. And I know that 99% of what he's saying in the House of Commons is a lie anyway, but that one in particular, because it is so hurtful to people involved, and he faces absolutely no consequence for it. It's disgusting. It's not something to be proud of in Parliament.
I think he's going to face punishment. I just don't think it's going to be in the usual form. I've been saying it for a while, but I think that the solution is civil unrest. I feel like until we take to the streets and make them aware of exactly how much we hate this snivelling prick being in charge, I feel like we're going to listen to more Jimmy Savile moments and more, I don't know if I'm the one that's eating the most cake moments and all of that, you know. Johnson's back to trying to play the sort of scabbery ruffian, and that act is old. So it's really time that he get a new one. The act of what it's like to be behind bars when you're a rich prat.
Unfortunately, I think even mass protest won't be the thing to oust him. It will have to be his own party. The worse he makes them look, especially those in marginal seats, because I think that there's some seats that were only in double figures for a Conservative win.
Yep.
If that was me in that position, I'd be wanting to distance myself so far from this government, knowing that my job is on the line in 2 years' time. I think that is going to be the blade coming down in the guillotine for him, is when he really puts too many people's jobs at risk in 2024, that they all just go, nope, we can't have this man. We need someone else that's going to be a bit more respectable, that I might still be able to keep my seat in 2024. I don't want that to happen, actually. That's a tricky thing. Do you want Boris Johnson to stay in power, be absolutely unelectable, because the whole country will know and most will accept how corrupt and just dirty he is? But he could do so much more damage in that time. Or do you want someone to come and replace him, try and undo his damage, and then make the Tory party look respectable and have a tighter election?
It's a tricky one, but for me, you know, whenever I have these debates with people who say that, you know, Keir Starmer's Labour is not the best option and we need to do blah, 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 the thing that I say is, yeah, but Boris Johnson is in a very real way killing people. He's killed people all the way through the pandemic by being lackadaisical with the COVID restrictions. He's going to throw them off. They're going to stop recording the daily death figures from March, obfuscating how bad coronavirus was, is, and will continue to be. He's the prime minister that's overseen a massive hike in NI, which is going to hit people massively. The prime minister that oversaw a shit Brexit deal that means that we had energy crises and all these things. I understand, like, oh, it's great that he's in power and he's, you know, making them look stupid and making them look shit. And if that's all he was doing, I'd be like, keep him there. You know, he's a shaven monkey who makes them look stupid. He's cost real people their lives. And so as much as I want to see the Tories fall, I also don't want British people to keep dying because he's a prick. So
the thing to hold on to in the other scenario of him being replaced is that his replacement just won't be as popular with the people that are voting for Boris, to quote, because they're not voting Conservative. They're not voting for Alexander Boris de Pfeffel Johnson. They're voting for the brand.
Mm-hmm.
So there is the hope that another leader just wouldn't have that pull of people who aren't really engaged in politics and they're not paying attention, essentially. But, oh, yeah, he hosted Have I Got News For You? It was funny. I'll vote for him.
Yeah, I feel like, populism needs to die. Tansky said it last week. Populism needs to die, and I've been saying it for a long time. There's no use in a populist leader because you get people that would stand behind them making stupid decisions because they like them personally, and that doesn't work. I don't want to like politicians. I want politicians to do their jobs. And that's, you know, it's why I'm okay with backing Starmer, because he's not exactly, you know, not exactly bowl me over with his personality, but I don't want or need him to. I want him to get in and fix the amount of NI that I pay. And,
yeah, be a level head, sort things out. I don't need him to be a showman.
Exactly. I don't want a showman as a prime minister. I want someone that's going to do the job. And one thing that I talked about as well, you know, the people that talk about the way that he does what the prime minister does now as regards himself, stood near a flag. I want him to reclaim nationalism in a way, because I think that there used to be nothing wrong with being proud of being British, but right now there's a fine line between being proud to be British and being proud to come from Brexit Island. And
there is a lot of rebuilding to do with that. It's because I don't think there's been any real pride in being British in a long time. And that all stems from prejudice, discrimination, and just treatment of other countries, especially when expats are there, and the treatment that they give to locals. There's a lot of things that need to be improved before we can say that you can be proud to be British again, I think.
100%. Anything else you want to cover?
Nadine Dorries with a pillow.
You forget that much like a spider, she has book lungs. Well, thank you very much for the conversation, Bounce. It has been illuminating, and I sure hope everyone enjoys it. Bounce, by the way, is the absolute genius that designed the logo for the podcast and for the blog. So if you have any digital design work, I would highly suggest checking out his Instagram and his Twitter, because I will link that in the description. And hopefully we'll catch up with you again where we can talk about some other things and get your opinions on those. Feel free to check him out again. I will link all of his socials in the description. But thanks for joining us again on Politically Enraged, and we will catch you again soon. Thanks for joining us here at Politically Enraged, the podcast built for angry lefties. Remember, until next time, that you can contact me online. You can find me at Political Ragers on Twitter, Politically Enraged on Instagram, and Davy Moo on TikTok. I'm more than happy to hear your suggestions for how this show can move forward, and I really hope to keep you politically engaged and politically enraged. Until next time, stay angry.